Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Well, good afternoon to American. Welcome aboard to another exciting episode of Southern American. Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, and along with my most debonair, my most sophisticated, my most handsome and coolest of all co-hosts, Cool Mike. Good afternoon, Mikey.
Good afternoon, Annie. Thank you. My introductions get better and better every show. Even you've got Jermaine. Jermaine's got that, kind of giving me the same type of introductions as well. But thank you, everyone. Another exciting episode of Southern Sense. Also want to thank you for that great episode we had on Tuesday as well. Man, oh, man. We just going big time.
Yeah, that one so far has had over 7,000 hits, and it's still growing. You know, it's not our personal best, which was 40,000, but it's fun to now see that we are a featured host here on Blog Talk Radio, and where we used to get just a couple of hundred hits on shows, we're now getting it up in the thousands, and it's such a blessing. I'm glad that we have succeeded this far, and I want to thank all of our listeners for helping us become one of the fastest growing conservative shows here on Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's not only great, but I remember when it was a milestone when Perry and I hit 4,000 for a month. It's like we were ready to break out the shot glasses and the beer for a little party. And that's great. And that's a great tribute to you, Annie. You make most of this happen, and how great. And I also had a couple people message me. Dale Peterson did not win, everyone, sadly. He, as Dale put it, too many dummies in voting or whatever. I love how he talks, but no, he did not win, sadly. And, well, that's life. A new Friday, a new show, a new direction.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I want to remind everyone, we do have a new website up, and you can always hook up with the show anytime. Just bookmark it. It's southernsense.webs, WEBS.com. Just put sense.com, Same address basically as here. It'll bring you to the show anytime you want. It also has a great member forum. If you sign up on there, you can become part of the team. We also have pictures of all our past guests and all the fallen heroes that we have honored. It's a lot of good, really good stuff up there. We got a calendar so you can see in advance who our guests are. Instead of just going through the Blog Talk Radio and having to scroll up and down, you can see it all at one quick shot. So we've got a great site. And what we're going to be doing, Mike, this is something new. We have a cafe shop up there where we offer T-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, even blankets for your dog. We got tote bags on there. And I have ordered one of the tote bags, which is going to come to my house next week or so. And we're going to give it away, a free tote bag. But in order to be eligible, they have to be a member of Blog Talk Radio and following my show, as well as a member on our site, which is southernsense.webs.com. And we're randomly going to pick one of our followers, and we're going to give them a free tote bag. How's that sound?
Oh, that sounds great. And Jermaine was like, when you mentioned that yesterday on our show, last night Annie was called in on our show. He's text messaging me, or not texting, he's private messaging me. He says, damn, you guys now got tote bags and coffee mugs too? I'm just like... We go, yeah, that's all you're doing, and that's great. And also, we're going to put a couple cans of a new kind of fruit drink and Playboy Energy in that tote bag too. So we'll give you 6 cans of a little bit of everything.
Oh, cool. That's going to be great. Listen, we got 2 things going before we do our dedication. Number one, it has come to our attention, a previous guest of ours by the name of Chuck Kirkpatrick. He had a website up called The People's Vote. And unfortunately, we found out there's some irregularities. And I want to let everyone know that Southern Sense does not endorse Chuck Kirkpatrick or his site. I'm sorry if people have gotten ripped off, and I feel really bad for them. Some people have been hit financially because of this man. And want everyone to know, do not, even though we have the show up there, I'm going to put a disclaimer on it so that no one else will get hurt by this individual. And I hope the people that have been hurt end up finding their justice, whether they end up suing him or finding criminal charges or whatever. I feel bad for them, and I apologize for the pain that they're going through. That said.
In unprofessional terms, everybody, because Annie is the professional, the guy's a fucking crook. So don't go near the guy. That's the easiest way to put it. But these carnival acts are everywhere. You know, 9/11, you had all kinds of scammers and sadness of people's, and, you know, you always have this. And, you know, when we find it out, we'll bring it to your attention. It's, you found out, obviously, just a few minutes ago, and here we are. So, anyway, I think that's great. I mean, we can, I shouldn't say I think it's great. I think it's good that we are bringing it to attention, whether it's good, bad, positive, or negative. We had this guy as our show, as a guest. We're not aware of, these irregularities or him basically being a crook. You know, that took time to figure that out. But anyway,
yeah.
So in layperson's terms, stay away from him, block him on Facebook, or sue him. Or
yeah.
Send your local gangster thugs to break a few of his legs. That might do it too. But we're not encouraging you to do that.
No, we are not. Nothing like being blunt, Mike. Anyway.
I'm the union man around here. You know, and I mean, this is sad, but I mean, hey, there are people taking advantage of, look how many people rip off seniors. I mean, we always got to keep our eyes open on everything. So.
Yeah. You know, the worst part is that I feel that the radio show is like my home. You know, when I invite someone into my home, I expect my guests to behave in a certain manner. When they don't, and you're disappointed, that's when you end up picking them up and throwing them out the door. And I'll tell you, I've done that twice, where I physically picked someone up and threw them out of my house. And unfortunately, Mr. Kirkpatrick has now been thrown out of this house. That said, second rant before we get to our dedication. I was catching Lindsey Graham up on, he was on Hannity on the radio, Sean Hannity's radio show. And he started off sounding like a good, strong conservative. You know, somewhere along the way, we've kind of figured maybe the Tea Party did influence him and he changed his ways. He started off being very, very strong against the Obama administration and their actions in Libya and Benghazi Gate. I'm trying to say Benghazi and Libya at the same time didn't work. And he came across fantastic. And I'm sitting there rooting for him and saying, finally, Lindsay, you get it. But in the same breath, Sean Hannity asked him what he felt about the name being tossed in the ring for Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense. And the name was John Kerry. And there I almost wrecked my car because I was driving. And Lindsey Graham said he would not oppose the name being brought forward to the Senate. He found no reason why he should not become Secretary of Defense or Secretary of State. And there I went into a royal conniption. You can imagine me, Mike. And
I can. Rode a little road rage.
Well,
why don't you tell people why, Annie? I don't think a lot of people know the reasons why.
I fired off, and I'm going to have to be honest, I fired off emails to all of our Buford Tea Party members. I put it up in Facebook. I put it up in Twitter. I also put it up on Lindsey Graham's Facebook page. I sent him two emails. And if anyone remembers the Swift boat back in Kerry was running for president, they got to remember that this is the very same man when he came home from Vietnam threw his medals away. How can you ask any member of the military to respect a man who does not respect the military in that manner? He threw his medals away. Furthermore, he went before Congress and gave false testimony against his brothers in arms. And this is all during the Vietnam War. And John Kerry does not deserve the honors of, or should he ever serve as Secretary of State or as Secretary of Defense. And if Lindsey Graham or any other senator decides to appoint him that, then they deserve to be tarred, feathered, put on a train, and rode out of town.
Well, we're rocking and rolling today. Tarred, feathered, breaking legs.
Oh, man. Well, people know that Mike has been on the road as he's been calling into the show, my co-host. He is finally, it sounds like he's home, and hopefully he'll be on the computer soon. Want to say hi to everyone that's in the chat room and that's listening in. We got a lot of our good followers like Iggy, Darianne, who has her own show here on BTR. God bless her. And we've got Reactionary, who's got his show here on BTR. Welcome aboard. That said, we're going to go ahead with the dedication, and those who listen in know that every show we do is now dedicated to a fallen hero, be they military, law enforcement. They deserve to be honored. These men and women have given their lives for our safety and protection. And this show dedication is going out to Army Corporal Mitchell Red Cross Jr. And that said, we go ahead with the dedication. This is dated November 6th, 2012. A Native American Medal of Honor recipient, Red Cloud, killed in action 62 years ago today. This is from Camp Red Cloud in South Korea. The Army in warrior country is planning to further honor the memory of Corporal Mitchell Red Cloud Jr., who stand to the death against the enemy night attack during the Korean War, earned him a posthumous Medal of Honor, and for whom Camp Red Cloud was named. The U.S. Army Garrison Red Cloud and Area 1 is now working out details for the new honors to be carried out next April at Camp Red Cloud. They are to include placement of a granite monument outside of the Garrison Headquarters building, dedication of a tree there bearing a plaque in his memory, and formal naming of the headquarters building in his honor. Current plans for the honors to be conferred during a ceremony is slated for next Arbor Day, April 26th, said Command Sergeant Major Mitchell L. Hatfield, the Area 1 Command Sergeant Major. November 5 is the 62th anniversary of Red Cloud's death in combat at the age of 26, while holding off the enemy in a remote hilltop in North Korea in 1950. He was an infantryman with Company E, 9th Infantry Regiment, 24th Infantry Division. The action in which he was killed erupted when his unit was positioned on the ridge of Hill 123 near Chungnyong, North Korea. Red Cloud was manning a listening post on the point of the ridge, out beyond his company's main positions. He was armed with a Browning automatic rifle. Chinese forces made a coordinated attack on Hill 123 and vicinity. At least part of that attacking force slipped in on Company E's position from the rear and killed many on the spot, some of them in their sleep. When Red Cloud detected Chinese movements from his position, he gave the alarm, Company E's first. And as he did, a group of Chinese bolted from the brush and dashed towards him. He sprang up and poured intense, accurate BAR fire, which is BAR's name for his Browning automatic rifle. Accurate BAR fire into the onrushing troops. With utter fearlessness, he continued firing, according to the citation that accompanied his Medal of Honor. Struck by enemy rounds, he fell, but refusing help, got to his feet, wrapped around an arm around a small tree, and kept up the point blank fire before falling for the last time. American officers later found Chinese dead in front of Red Cloud's body. Several months later, he was awarded the Medal of Honor for his dauntless courage and gallant self-sacrifice. His heroic act stopped the enemy from overrunning his company's position and gained time for reorganization and evacuation of the wounded, according to the award citation. General Omar Bradley, then chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, presented the medal to Red Cloud's mother, Lillian Nellie Red Cloud, at an April 1951 ceremony at the Pentagon. A few years after his death, on Armed Forces Day 1957, the Army commemorated his value by giving his name to the installation that is now Camp Red Cloud in Winchonbu, South Korea. Still, other recognition followed over the years. It included the naming of a veteran's post in public parks, and in 1999, the U.S. Navy named for him a newly commissioned Watson-class cargo ship, the USNS Red Cloud. His daughter, Anita Red Cloud, christened the ship at San Diego, California. Coincidentally, the anniversary of Red Cloud's death comes during National American Indian Heritage Month, observed annually in November. Red Cloud was a native of the Ho-Chunk tribe, also known as the Winnebago. He was a descendant of warriors and the grandson of a Ho-Chunk chief. Red Cloud was born on July 2, 1924 in Wisconsin. A few months before America entered World War II, he enlisted in the U.S. Marine Corps. As a Marine, he saw combat in Guadalcanal and the elite 2nd Marine Raider Battalion, also known as Carlson's Raiders. He fell sick with malaria, refused an offer of medical discharge, and after long illness and recovery, was back to duty in time to serve with the 6th Marine Division in the Battle of Okinawa. After the war, he was honorably discharged from the Marine Corps with the rank of sergeant. But just a few years later, in 1948, he returned to active duty by enlisting in the Army. Red Cloud has also been commemorated at the 2nd Infantry Division Museum on Camp Red Cloud. Just inside the entrance, visitors encounter a photo of Red Cloud, a copy of his Medal of Honor citation, and a photo of Bradley presenting the medal to Red Cloud's mother, along with the written explanation of the naming of Camp Red Cloud. He was buried at the United Nations Cemetery in Korea, but in 1955, his body was exhumed, transported to Wisconsin, and interred at the Decorah Cemetery at Winnebago Mission in March of that year. Were he alive today, Red Cloud would have been 88 years old. His citation reads, Corporal Red Cloud, Company E, distinguished himself by conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity above and beyond the call of duty in action against the enemy. From his position on the point of a ridge immediately in front of the company command post, he was the first to detect the approach of Chinese communist forces and gave the alarm as the enemy charged from a bush-covered area less than 100 feet from him. springing up, he delivered a devastating point-blank automatic rifle fire into the advancing enemy. His accurate and intense fire checked the assault and gained time for the company to consolidate its defense. With utter fearlessness, he maintained his firing position until severely wounded by enemy fire. Refusing assistance, he pulled himself to his feet and, wrapping his arm around a tree, continued his deadly fire again until he was fatally wounded. This heroic act stopped the enemy from overrunning his company's position and gained time for reorganization and evacuation of the wounded. Corporal Red Cloud's dauntless courage and gallant self-sacrifice reflects the highest credit upon himself and upholds the esteemed traditions of the U.S. Army. Well, to Corporal Red Cloud and to all our heroes out there, we dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon.
I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. When I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger. And I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. My strength was not taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames.
Okay, My Name is America by Todd Ellen Herndon. God bless. Like, before
what
we
an
have
awesome
fun,
song.
Yeah, isn't it? I always have to mute my mic on this end because I end up singing it in the background. But I forgot
always
to mention.
Have to, always have to, towards the end of the dedication, always have to listen to you. How quickly, to get the timer going, how quickly before Annie starts crying. What a great tribute this was. I mean, this is, here's a guy who, okay, he did a great job. He left the military, starting his life. Nope. 2 years later, he's back in. What a, just these people are so unselfish. God, I mean, we are so blessed to have a melting pot of heroes in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of heroes, I did forget to mention one thing before we bring our guest on. I wanted to do that. And everyone knows I'm a huge supporter and fan of the Independence Fund, which helps wounded veterans coming home after the VA lets them go and after everyone else says, you know, bye, this is the end of you, this is it, we're done helping you. They step in and go that extra step. And we had recently the September 15th Lieutenant Dan Weekend here in Buford, where Gary Sinise, who we've interviewed twice on the show, would come down with his Lieutenant Dan band and give a concert, and all the proceeds and everything go to these veterans. Well, this past concert raised enough money that this Christmas they're going up to Walter Reed Hospital and giving three of these supercharged wheelchairs to veterans. Now, got to remember, each one of these chairs, the base cost, I mean, the wholesale cost on this is $29,000, and they were able to purchase three of these chairs, these mechanized chairs that actually are fantastic and help these veterans lead an independent life. So they're going to be awarding three of these chairs this Christmas to three worthy veterans. So God
wow.
bless. And if you can, make sure you go to independence.org and make a donation to them and help them get even more chairs. And they've been building houses for quadriplegics and so forth. They also help the families with counseling and whatever they need. They bend over backwards to do. So, again, independence.org. And please make, even if it's $5, make a donation. Let's bring our guest on. We've got a special guest today. His name is Corey Swanson. He is the Executive Vice President of the John Locke Foundation. Good afternoon, Mr. Swanson.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, I'm. As you can see, we're doing fine.
Right. You're doing fine.
Yeah. Can you tell us exactly what the John Locke Foundation is? Because I don't think a lot of people are familiar with who John Locke was.
Right. Well, John Locke was a British philosopher who lived in the 17th century, in the late 17th century. And John Locke is famous for promoting in his Two Treatises of Government, which is a famous philosophical text, promoting the idea of private property. And he was very influential among the founding fathers, particularly Jefferson and Adams and that crew. And he influenced a lot of the thinking about constitutional government and about protecting private property, particularly, and about limited government. The John Locke Foundation, why we're named after him, we are a state-based public policy think tank. We're only in North Carolina. And John Locke has a North Carolina connection. And that is that, John Locke was kind of the one-man think tank for one of the proprietors of the Carolinas. That guy's name was the Earl of Shaftesbury. And Locke helped write the first constitutions of the Carolinas. The king had given eight gentlemen the land that encompasses North Carolina and South Carolina, and Shaftesbury is one of those people. So that's how the John Locke connection comes about. And Locke, in that first constitution of the Carolinas, was influential in getting things in about private property and so on, and his influence just continues. And so as the John Locke Foundation, we are a state-based public policy think tank, as I said, that opened its doors in 1990. We are part of a larger, what we like to call the freedom movement. There are now in all 50 states free market state-based think tanks. This idea got off the ground in the late 1980s, and the John Locke Foundation is one of the oldest and largest of the state-based think tanks. And so we're just very proud to be part of this group of actually freedom fighters, we call ourselves, because we're out there promoting limited government and private property and personal responsibility.
So what we have here in South Carolina, the Policy Council, do you
Correct.
Work with them?
We do on occasion. Certainly they are part of that network. And, actually South Carolina has a very important part in the state-based think tank network. Tom Rowe, who was a very successful merchant from South Carolina, was really responsible for getting this whole idea off the ground. He had been an unofficial advisor with President Reagan, and the idea got going, particularly the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, American Enterprise Institute, got really to be very prominent in the late 70s and 1980s. The idea started floating around that, we should be replicating this type of think tank at a state-based level. And as the story goes, I don't know how accurate it is, but the story goes that one day Mr. Rowe was at the White House and the discussion was what was about state-based think tanks, and Mr. Reagan said something to the effect that, Tom, why don't you make this happen? And so Mr. Rowe got things off the ground with the South Carolina Policy Council and helped to fund other things, too, in the movement.
Now, do you plan on expanding beyond North Carolina, or are you just going to stay centered there?
We are centered in North Carolina, and that's where we will stay. As I mentioned, there are other state-based think tanks in each state now, and so we are content to stay in North Carolina. That's our expertise.
Now, you were actually formed. The group was formed by Mark Roderman and John Hood. You want to tell us about how they formed this? Because there were some humorous stories when I was reading this.
Well, they got this off the ground with another gentleman by the name of Art Pope. And they started this out as a very small operation in 1990. And they were very convinced that ideas matter. And that's why they started the John Locke Foundation, to promote private property and limited government and personal responsibility. And so it's just grown over the years to where our staff now is about 25 full-time people, and our budget's gone from just a few thousand dollars up to almost $3.7 million a year now.
Wow, that's some expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also publish a Carolina Journal. Can people get that? Can they subscribe to it?
Yes,
have it delivered?
Yes. It's a free publication on the John Locke Foundation. We're very proud of that aspect of our operation, which is something that really nobody else has across the United States in the state think tank area. Carolina Journal is our flagship publication. It's published once a month and reaches about 200,000 North Carolinians, politically active North Carolinians each month. We also have an online daily version of it, and we also promote Carolina Journal work through the Carolina Journal radio network and online videos as well. But the Carolina Journal, we were one of the first people to really get the idea of nonprofit newspapers off the ground. And Carolina Journal has become very influential in the state. It, as the major newspapers contract and take their, and their staffs shrink down, the Carolina Journal is called a very special niche now, where we concentrate on what we call long-form investigative reporting. We take the time to really go after stories. We concentrate a lot, it happens, on corruption in North Carolina politics. And as in any state, there's a lot of corruption.
No, there's no corruption.
No,
oh,
corruption.
Please.
But our work has led to putting several different state officials in jail around North Carolina, as well as a former U.S. congressman for North Carolina. So we're very, very proud of that work, and we continue to do that.
All right, so you're not just about small government. You're about transparency in government.
Yes, very much so. And we do have a site called North Carolina Transparency, where we list all the state agencies, local governments, like cities and counties and so on. And we have a criteria for transparency, and we give each of these entities grades. and they are welcome to come in and show us where they've done work to increase their transparency so they can raise their grades. And so, yeah, it's a very interesting area.
Yeah. Now, getting back to John Locke, a lot of what our Declaration of Independence and Constitution have in it, you actually can trace directly back to him, such as the right of the governed. And what was his opinion on that? Because that goes directly to a specific line in the Declaration.
Well, which line are you talking about?
About the right of the governed, if they can, they can overturn.
Right, yeah, as a matter of fact, right, and Jefferson talked about that as well. But if the government become too oppressed, they are certainly within their rights to revolt, you know. And now that can be read several different ways, of course. Our prescribed way of revolting is at the voting booth. You know, I think Jefferson said, too, that a little revolt now and then is a very good thing. So, you know, rather than a physical revolution, which did happen, you know, our idea now of revolution is at the voting booth. And, you know, that's why it's very important to get out and support your candidates.
Yeah. Now, what's your opinion about all 50 states, groups from all 50 states submitting petitions for succession to the White House?
Well, I don't think that will go very far. I think it's more of a, you know, a vocal indication of how, you know, states fearing the big administrative state and the imposition of, particularly the imposition of mandates on the states, you know, where the federal government will say, you know, we're going to pay, well, this is how they're doing health care, kind of, on the Medicaid stuff, you know, is that we're going to pay for this for the first few years, and we're going to give you lots of money, but then, you know, there's this afterwards where the states have to pick up the bill then, and that's how states get into trouble a lot of times. You know, they'll take all the federal money, but then after it dries up, they're left holding the bag.
That's true. As a matter of fact, Nikki Haley has just notified the Catherine Sebelius that she will not set up the health care exchange.
Exactly.
I believe that three states would be Texas, Arizona, and South Carolina.
Right, and I think you'll see some more states coming online with that. You know, that's the best thing the states can do on the health care thing if they don't, is not participate in it and make the federal government pay it all, and it's going to end up, you know, it's going to end up being a mess, and that's the way states can stay out of that kind of tentacle, you know, having to take on responsibility after the federal government goes away or bails out from it.
Right. Now, I'm one of the few people that did read the health care bill, and I started writing about it back in August of 2009. And in it, I stated 15 areas in which I found were direct violation of the Constitution. I even wrote about alternatives to it. But now everything I said was going to happen is happening. I said that if you have X amount of employees, I think it's like 50 employees, if you go down to 49, you're not going to fall underneath the health care mandate.
Sure.
If you do have more than 50 employees, you're going to cut back everyone so that you only have 29 full-time and everyone else is part-time, forcing people to work two jobs. And that's not an easy thing to do if you're juggling a household and kids and bills and a mortgage. And now we're seeing everyone doing this. You've got Applebee's, you've got Outback, I believe it was Golden Corral and one of the other ones. This has become a huge, huge mess. Do you see any potential for Congress now to defund Obamacare?
No, I don't think it will defund Obamacare. I think there are certain things that the states can do, like on the Medicaid thing. But I think that what we're going to see is Obamacare is a job killer. I mean, that's just it. Even at our level of a small operation, our health care costs are going to go up almost 30% next year. That's a huge, huge increase that we have to make up. But the employers are going to do what they have to do to keep their businesses alive, which is, you know, basically, as you said, not hire new folks or turn people into part-time workers and so on. And then where does that leave the workers? It's going to be a huge economic mess. And it strikes me as just very, very strange and odd that that this doesn't resonate with the powers that be, that somehow, you know, the notion of redistribution, that the government has to take money from other people to take care of other people, they simply don't understand how the economy works and how a free market works, it seems to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking at what I wrote back so long ago, and I'm looking at where I counted in 13 violations of the Fifth Amendment, where nor should any person be deprived of life, liberty, or property, nor shall property, private property, be taken for public use without compensation.
Right.
I saw a rationing in 8 different places, and property was restricted in 4 cases, and property was taken in one section to create health care clinics without compensating the property holders.
Right.
Under eminent domain, they're just going to go in and say, I want to put a health care clinic here. You own that property? No, you don't anymore. We own it.
Right. Yeah, eminent domain is a really contentious issue, particularly at the state levels or at the federal level as well, but, you know, at the state levels particularly. And, you know, it's litigated all the time, what it exactly means, how, you know, what it's an overreach of government in most cases, and people are not properly compensated for the taking of their property, and it continues to be a highly litigated issue, and will be in the future.
Yeah, I, like I said, I'm going back over what I wrote back so long ago. I saw 19 separate violations of the Fourth Amendment, which is or the right for us to be secure in our persons and papers.
Right.
Against unreasonable search and seizures. What people don't realize is they have to open up their financial records and their bank accounts to government, and government is going to be going directly into them.
Sure.
I mean, hello, folks.
Wake up. Yep. It is going to be a further intrusion, a very large intrusion, and people just should not put up with it. But it seems, you know, that the administrative state has grown so much over the years from the Roosevelt administration on, you know, that's, you know, our government is no longer really run by the people. It's run by unelected officials who have these administrative agencies, and it's a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the things I also saw in is that they can actually conscript people into government service without compensating them. Isn't that slavery? I thought we abolished slavery.
Right. Sure, sounds like it. Yes. And I think you'll see in the next 4 years now too that you know this election was really just kind of a status quo election. In other words, you know, nothing particularly big happened anywhere. You know, Obama did not get a wave of popularity. He only won by a little over 50%, 51% almost. You know, and nothing much changed at the Senate. You know, the Democrats stay in charge. On the House, the Republicans stay in charge. And really what's I don't think a whole lot is going to happen legislatively. Where it's going to happen a lot is at the administrative agency level. You're going to see moves made now, I think, by the agencies like environmental agencies and others. That's where the real movement is going to take, because I think the government's kind of still at a standstill. And so watch out. I think you're going to see a lot more intrusive government via the administrative agencies.
You mean more executive orders?
More executive orders, correct. Or, you know, like the EPA giving rulings on various things, and the regulatory agencies all over the place are just going to be, it's going to be much more intrusive.
Now, one thing that always drives me nuts is that whenever we end up in a debate with a progressive, they end up starting to call those of us the conservative Nazis, fascists. can you please explain to them how that is completely opposite of what we stand for? How I try to explain to them, you know, fascism is just another form of socialism, and
right.
They don't get it. Can you maybe say something that I'm not saying?
I don't know. I mean, I think it comes down to one's view of what a human being is about human nature, and certainly, you know, the conservative free market view posits that individuals have power over their own person, have power over their thoughts. You know, that's where the power emanates from. It doesn't emanate from government. It emanates from individuals. And conservatives put a very high premium on individual rights and our ability to make choices. Fascism, socialism, in all its various forms, diminishes the individual because it's a bunch of it's all done by the government who tells you what to do, and it seems to me to be the exact opposite of what conservatives think about the individual and the power of the individual.
Yeah, we believe that we should choose how our destiny goes.
Exactly.
We make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas under socialism and fascism, they say, no, you will be a baker or you
right.
will be a butcher. Instead of saying, hey, listen, in my heart, I really want to be an actor or
right.
I want to be an artist. Nope. We need you over here, putting the spikes in the railroad.
That's right.
And that's the difference. Not only that, John Locke was one of the earliest proponents for abolishing slavery, wasn't he?
Yes, I mean that's a kind of a very contentious area actually. But yes, in general, he was not even though he was a creature of his time, of course, and slavery was there. But yeah, he was an advocate for changing that viewpoint. Certainly so.
Yeah, he didn't do it in his first treatise. It was the second one that he finally started to refute
right.
slavery. But he also came up with the idea that we are creatures of our society, that when we're born, he called it the tabula rasa,
right.
meaning that we were a blank slate.
Right.
You sure it's not in the genes that makes a person a liberal or a conservative?
There has been some talk about that, hasn't there? Certainly saw some speculation on that recently about whether you're born as a liberal, born as a conservative. It seems to me that there's probably some truth to that. That your genetic disposition towards certain ways of thinking, but also I think it's how the type of environment you're brought up in a lot, particularly what you're exposed to in your education, family values, and what have you, that play a large role too. For example, I didn't come to my census about free markets and so on until I got into graduate school, really, and was among surprisingly a group of professors who were libertarian and conservatives and promoted the free market, and that's where I started to do all my reading and talking with folks and figured it out. So I think I was heavily influenced by people I worked with.
Well, I'm glad you had the conversion.
Right.
Welcome aboard.
Yes.
And he was also when he was saying that that we are a blank slate, he was throwing that in to say God does exist and he is now part of the entire values that we have. In a way, he was, would be today a modern-day conservative, wouldn't he?
Yeah, definitely so. I mean, he would be termed that, because he was that group of philosophers, Locke and Hume and others, excuse me, who really, promoted the idea that the human being, the individual, has this extraordinary power to define things, and that government does not have that power. So, very much so. He'd be considered a modern-day conservative.
Yeah, because I got into a debate with someone once up on Twitter, and he kept on trying to say that God doesn't exist, that we were created because of a chemical reaction. But I said, how do you explain the soul? How do you explain that? I mean, a chemical reaction can maybe create a seed to turn into a plant, but how do you explain the human existence that makes us uniquely individual? And he just kept on saying it's a chemical reaction. I don't think I'm a chemical reaction. Are you?
It's a hard thing to say sometimes. I think that regardless of where you land on that argument, whether you think God exists or not, the the real focus is on how you treat individuals, how you treat your fellow human beings, and I think that which side you fall on doesn't matter, so long as you have that real focus on that individuals are ends and not means, then you're on the right track.
Yeah, it comes down basically to the question: what's the difference between a moral man and an ethical man? And the difference is that a moral man knows instinctively what is right. An ethical man may know what is right, but he'll debate you on the point.
That's a good definition. Yes, I had not thought of it that way. But yes, because morality and ethics. Well, we know this in fact about the law. Morality and law may coincide, but often they don't coincide. I mean, you can do things that are legal that are terribly immoral. So.
Absolutely. He also had a unique stance on education, one that I think would drive a lot of the teachers today up the wall.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't believe in coddling the student.
No, he did not believe in coddling the student. I think that that emanates from how you think about the individual. He did not, he was a person who thought that I think a very strong education that was rooted not only in science and industry, but also had a very strong moral component to it, was very important, and that students should be kind of driven to really excel.
Yeah. Now, just something just came across the news today, and I wanted a little bit of your input. This Hostess Twinkies. Twinkies are finally. They're going away. We
right.
thought that they would outlast the cockroach.
Right.
But, you know, unions killed them, didn't they?
Yes.
And I know this is going to get my co-host Cool Mike in an uproar. So, Mike, I want you to join in on this one.
Okay. No, yes, I think that's true. This is a business decision that they simply could not go forward and run the business unless they had these concessions. Now, the concessions, granted, were quite severe, I think, and the workers would have had to absorb a lot. But the issue comes down to now, okay, so you don't have the business any longer, so these guys are out of work. I think, the unions needed to understand that the Hostess company wasn't bluffing in this instance. This was simply a matter of business survival, and I don't think they took it seriously, obviously.
Yeah, and everyone's turning around and saying, "Oh, but it's Wall Street, it's the shareholders, so you don't have to pay them profit." But there's something very wrong with that, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so. I think that it misses the point about what a business is about, what a business is for. And a business creates jobs, and so long as it's able to run within the confines of law, not be overregulated, is able to negotiate in good faith with its workers about wages and so on, I think a business can thrive. But where you get untold pressure from unions, after all, are not, as most organizations, are not about the workers themselves. It's about staying in power, or staying in business. Unions exist to stay in power, and so they don't know. It's the same way with teacher unions as well. I think they don't necessarily have the interests of the students at heart. They have the interests of the union at heart first and foremost. So, I think it's, unions can be a very, very bad situation.
All right, Mike, you with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I had another question kind of away from a change of subject. I don't actually know the whole situation. A business has to run and people have to make a living, too. I mean, but my question, a lot of lawsuits are being filed. Against the Obamacare. Is the Obamacare in? Is it here to stay? Is there any chance, other than what we talked about a little earlier, such as I know the Catholic Church is, and John Kennedy are filing a lawsuit regarding it's violating their religious rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are other Mickey Mouse groups, and I don't mean Mickey Mouse in a negative way, but
no,
there's so many. Are these dead? Do these any of them are any of them going to be successful?
I don't think so. I think in general, the broad scope of the Obamacare, there are certain things that kick in now, you know, particularly in 2014, but some may be sooner. And we're going to have to deal with those, and there'll continue to be lawsuits, challenges going on. But the other thing is that Obamacare, although it's supposed to go into effect in 2014, from what I understand, they're not even close to being ready to be able to institute a lot of this, and it's going to be down the road further. So that perhaps gives some hopes to some groups that they are able to. Negate some of this, and perhaps that gives hopes to unwinding some of Obamacare. But you know, we'll have to see when we come to 2014 exactly how ready they are to institute some of this stuff. It's not clear they're going to be able to institute what they want to.
Yeah, I got into it with an insurance agent when I went to pick up my prescription, and he was selling Medicare packages, and on his display he had Medicare Advantage, and that all of a sudden just made my blood boil. And I says, why are you selling Medicare Advantage when in 2014 Medicare Advantage is phased out? They won't exist. So you're selling people a policy and insurance that they're not going to have but for 1 year.
He had
no answer.
Yeah, well,
always a man at a carnival looking to make a buck.
That could be. That could very well be.
Another question regarding...
Yes.
We had a guest on, I think it was last week or the week before. You probably could, and I'll tell you, you could have made a fortune in Michigan this election regarding corruption. We had election rigging, and we had all kinds of stuff going on, and these people got caught.
Right.
But she had mentioned when the Supreme Court made its ruling regarding the Obamacare, that they ruled a tax. Now, she also commented that a tax must start in the House, not the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
News to me. This is just coming from all kinds of fronts. We were
hoping
this court would stop it and that court would stop it.
Well,
ultimately, the Supreme Court and ultimately Romney, just obviously nothing has.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything regarding that has any kind of merit? That since this is a tax actually has to start in the House than the Senate?
I'm not sure about that. I just don't know about that for sure. I mean, I've heard that as well, but I haven't confirmed that. The notion that this is a tax has some resonance because obviously your taxes are going to go up. This is a tax hike. Exactly how it gets played out, given the Supreme Court decision, among other things, I think that left that door open for further litigation on that issue, and we'll just have to see. I don't have anything definitive on that for you. However, I do want to say, if you're up in Michigan, some folks you might want to get on this program as well. It's from the Mackinac Center, which is the Michigan State-based think tank up there, and they are very good people, and they'll have some interesting insights, particularly in Michigan, but nationally as well.
We had election fraud, election rigging, fake candidates. I mean, you would have made a fortune. You could have retired now and not even worried about Obamacare. You'd be like, I got money to burn. But one other quick question.
Sure.
What inspired you to do this? Okay, you're walking along the street someday, or I mean, obviously now you mentioned you're into the millions. I mean, what started your inspiration?
Well, my own inspiration to get into the public policy end of things was when I was in graduate school. I started out, an organization was just getting off the ground at Bowling Green State University in Ohio, where I went to graduate school, called the Social Philosophy and Policy Center, and I had an internship there and just turned it into a full-time job as they grew. And so that's how I got the bug for public policy work. And then in 2000, I'd known the president of the John Locke Foundation, John Hood, and we just he offered me a job, so I came down, and it's been a really spectacular run here for the past 12 years. But you know, I got interested in the area of public policy, certainly in graduate school, and working with the Social Philosophy and Policy Center. It's just continued on.
Yeah. Just for a word of information, it's Article 1, Section 7 in the Constitution that says all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives.
Okay, good. Well,
but the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills.
Okay.
So that's the gray area right there. So that's
sure, that'll be litigated heavily.
Absolutely. Now, you know, South Carolina, like North Carolina, is a right-to-work state.
Yes.
And I had mentioned this when the Democrats were forming their convention in Charlotte, that they actually went in and said that only employees that are union members can work in the hotels and restaurants that they were frequenting. Is this true?
Well, I'd heard that as well. I'm not sure exactly what came of that. There were instances where on some of the work, construction work and whatever else was going on, that I think that they brought in union workers. But exactly how it all fell out, I never really did hear in the press about how it fell out. But that certainly was an issue, and it was brought up, you know, that North Carolina's right to work state. Are they going to honor the fact that we are a right-to-work state? And if you use local workers, they're not unionized. And that was the big hope, you know, that local workers would be used and that really pump up the economy a bit. And I don't think that happened.
Yeah. Now, just a little bit off subject, just for a split second.
Sure.
You're up in North Carolina. Are you near Charlotte?
No, we're in Raleigh, so we're in the middle of the state.
All right. Are you a NASCAR fan?
No, I'm not. But NASCAR is big here.
Absolutely. That's why I was mentioning North Carolina, because this weekend is their last and final race, the championship race.
Right.
The big question for him, Annie, should be Tar Heels, Duke, or Pack, Wolfpack.
Wolfpack, Duke, sorry to say.
Okay. Well, I co-host on another show. The guy is a huge Duke fan. Yeah. If Duke loses, we can't do a show.
That's,
I mean,
right.
He's just. I mean, every game. Well, which is great. We all got our. I love sports too. So we all got our cause.
Sure.
Another quick question regarding what is your take on whenever you lose an election, you hear all kinds of things, election rigging, blah blah, whatever.
Right.
What is your take on just the overall turnout, which appeared to be significantly lower, and it seemed to be at least indicate significant more Republican anger at Republican Party. Can you kind of post that? What is true? What's not true? What are you able to post together that's as close to factual as you can?
Right. Well, the turnout was a bit less than it was in 2008, certainly. And the Republicans. You know, you've heard all sorts of things about why the Republicans just kind of didn't have a clue what was going on. One of the things that I understand is that Republicans tended to model the turnout based upon that they thought 2008 was just an extraordinary, turnout that couldn't possibly happen again. And so they started to model their turnout predictions and other things based on the 2004 election or the 2004 election, and they just completely misread things. The fact of the matter is that although there was a bit of a lower turnout, certainly, the Democrats once again displayed a command of the ground game that the Republicans just can't seem to get up to speed on at the national level, certainly. Because there was an extraordinary ground game put on by the Obama administration. Even though the turnout was lower, they still got what they could out of that vote and had a very, very high turnout, particularly at the national level. At the state levels, it's a different story. Although we elected a Democratic president, you still have 30 states that have Republican governors. You have in North Carolina, for instance, we had an extraordinary turnaround in 2010. For the first time in over 100 years, we had Republican control of both the House and the Senate side. And now in 2012, we have a Republican governor. That's never happened before. For so many years, we have a Republican governor and a Republican House and Senate. And the House was able to increase their seats from 68 to 77, and the Senate increased their seats by a couple. I think they're up to 34 seats. And so they have veto-proof, not that you're going to need a veto-proof majority with a Republican governor, hopefully, but they have veto-proof majority now, and it's a really extraordinary thing. The other important thing at the state level that happened, and you've started to see this nationwide, I think, as well, coming into the 2010 election, the Democrats had always controlled, like, county commissions and so on. Where North Carolina has 100 counties. They had 60 of the counties, and the Republicans had 40 of the counties. The 2010 election saw an evening up where it became a 50-50 split, which is an extraordinary thing, and it really indicates the power of the Republican movement at the state level. And now with this new election, we don't have all the data in yet, but it looks like that we have increased, or that the Republicans have increased their control of county commissions as well. So that's a very good sign at the local level for conservatives.
Are we talking conservatives or just Republicans?
Well, I think because we're a nonpartisan organization, I tend to talk in terms of conservatives. Republicans, Republicans should be heartened by that, particularly at the state level. And I think nationwide, they are still the party in control at state levels, although the Democrats did make some significant gains. But nationwide, it's a mixed bag. It's a pretty much an evenly divided nation. But go ahead and look at a map of the electoral map, and you notice that, the red states are in the middle of the country and out in the west. It's the big population centers on the West Coast and the East Coast where the Democrat concentration is. And so, you have to keep in mind, even though it looks like, the United States is primarily a red country, the population centers are such that a lot of the population still votes Democrat as well.
Yeah. Now,
do you see the Tea Party playing any role in future, or is the Tea Party another kind of small group? Where do you see that as far
as this is going to be standpoint? Right. This is going to be very interesting. The Tea Party started off as something as a kind of movement to really talk about the economy and about fiscal issues and so on, and really giving some intellectual heft to things. And I think over time it has lost some of that power. It's turned into more, at least in North Carolina, to the Tea Party events I've been to, there's a lot of there's a big religious aspect to things. It's turned more into a social movement, and I'm not sure how much power it's really going to have anymore, because sometimes it's on the extreme, and people are looking for moderation, I think. So I don't think it's going to be as potent as it was in 2010, certainly not. It certainly wasn't this election.
Well, we'll see what happens in the midterm, because I think a lot of our Tea Parties are starting to gear up for the midterm because they realize we didn't do enough on this election.
Right. And it's very hard to sustain that energy over time. In 2008, they were really, really pumped up and kept it up very well in 2010, but it's very hard to keep that energy up, and maybe they just need a little respite and they'll come back strong in the midterm.
Yeah. Now, there's something else I saw on your website, and it's something that struck a chord with me. And on election night, I got into a little of a head-to-head with one of our conservative council members, and he was talking about these planned communities, these smart growth.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, my antennas went up, and I says, I will not support any Agenda 21 coming to this area.
Right.
And you are more for flex growth compared to smart growth. You want to let people know what the difference is between the two?
Well, flex growth, I think, is smart growth, first of all, is the government telling people how to live, where they can build, what they can do, and so on, based upon some kind of master plan that wants to dictate how people live. flex growth policy is puts more emphasis on individual choices and how individuals want to live, and you know, within the confines of the law, of course. But it's not driven by the government. It's driven by you know, individuals and small communities about where they want to live, how they want to live, you know, what kind of roads and transportation they want to use, and so on.
Yeah, because he was trying to tell us that where we are, I'm in an area known as the Tri-Command. We've got three military bases here, Parris Island Recruit Depot, the Marine Corps Air Station, and the Naval Hospital. And because of that, our population is spread out. We are more rural than anything else. But then
right.
You also have the city of Beaufort. And they're complaining that the county is expanding too much of their resources, you know, going between different rural areas to provide them, whether it's an emergency or road work. And they wanted to put us into these planned developments. And as soon as I heard that, I said, Agenda 21. And I said, do you have the resources if the entire community there goes down, like in New York City? And he looked at me like, I hadn't thought of it that way. And I said, when you have some sort of a disaster in our area, you know, whether it's a major storm or whatever, we recover very fast because we're accustomed to being independent.
Right.
But if you put us in these communities, we're going to be dependent upon you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't trust you to give me the services I need. I trust
right.
myself for providing them.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't answer that. And I looked at him and I said, you're supposed to be conservative?
Right.
And he kind of like, we'll take this up another time. And I said, good idea.
Okay, right. Yeah, the you know, the important thing to remember about, and I think when you use Agenda 21, what you're talking about is about not the conspiracy theory type aspects, but the notion that these types of policies, you know, driven by governments or driven by people who want to impose their own vision on you are just not good ideas, period. You know, no matter where they emanate from, these are just totally antithetical to the way that Americans you know, live their lives.
Yeah. Now, also, we've got these budget cuts that are looming at the
mm-hmm.
end of the year. And I know North Carolina has a heavy military presence. You've got Camp Lejeune.
Yep.
You've got, I'm going to think of the name. I'm going to say Little Creek, but that's not it. You've got a couple of Marine bases up there. And how much is that going to impact your economy should those cuts go through?
Well, it will definitely impact. I mean, you know, we had... you know, when Camp Lejeune and others were going to expand in North Carolina, you know, and around Fayetteville particularly, the housing, they built a lot of housing and preparing for this influx of military personnel, and it hasn't really happened yet. And so there's some overbuilding there, but certainly, you know this in South Carolina, where it will have a big impact on the economy if these cuts go through, right?
Yeah, and actually, in the area I'm in Beaufort, it has over 15,000 civilian jobs alone, just the civilians.
Right.
Then you add in all the other services that are done for, like, say, for police, fire, hospitals, schools, stores, you know, restaurants. If 15,000 people lose their jobs, plus we lose the military families, then you have all the empty housing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would actually send us into a tailspin. I don't know if we'd be able to recover from.
Right. So, I mean, you have this. It is a dilemma, and you've got to be very careful how you go about adjusting it. Certainly, the military has to make adjustments on its sizing and other things, you know, and other communities have been subject to these closures as well, and it's not a pretty picture when it happens. But you know, but the fiscal cliff, I mean, these cuts are borne by the fiscal cliff, and so, you know, we hope something comes about that so these things don't go into effect.
Yeah, it kind of like scared me this morning when I was looking at the TV and they showed a shot of President Obama in these behind closed door talks for the budget, and there he is with Boehner, you know, laughing
right.
and clapping.
Right.
We're in trouble here, folks.
Exactly.
Folks, when I saw that, it's Boehner laughing and smiling instead of being serious and stern. We got a problem.
Not a confidence builder, that's for sure.
No, it's not.
Well,
now,
and I think, again, that just goes to show that in the big picture of things, we can't look to either parties to solve problems. We need to look within to we the people.
Right.
And it always drove me crazy. People are rallying around Scott Walker. Scott Walker is no different than Boehner, and neither is Obama. I mean, the answers lie within the we the people from the declaration that basically said, look, this is up to you. And I really believe that the ruling, and I'd like your opinion on this, I think the Supreme Court ruling regarding the Arizona law basically said, look, these are your politicians. You want 50 different laws in 50 states? Not happening. These are your politicians. You either, you know, stand up and be counted and do it yourself, or, you know, get new politicians.
Right.
Almost like they're just saying, are you people stupid?
Well, I mean, that's one of the great things about the Tea Party, you know, when it was in its heyday there. They said, you know, we're going to hold the candidates accountable. And they did, you know. We're electing you, we're putting resources into you and so on, and we want you to act in certain ways, vote and legislate in certain ways. And if you don't, we're calling you back. And, energy needs to stay there. You know, the legislators need to know they need to be accountable and can be called back at any time.
Yeah, because right now I'm going after Lindsey Graham full time. I don't know if you caught the interview yesterday with Sean Hannity on his radio show. And he started off fantastic, you know, saying that he was going to hold Obama's feet to the fire in the administration over Libya and Benghazi gate.
Right.
But then he did a complete flip-flop where he said he would not oppose, and he saw no reason not to support John Kerry as Secretary of Defense or Secretary of State.
Uh-huh.
And I hit the ceiling. I blew a gasket. And at the start of the show, people heard my little bit of a rant there. And I fired off to him, and I said, you know, we have not forgotten that you threw your medals away. And we have not forgotten that you gave false testimony before Congress against your fellow warriors in arms.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, the Swift voters are not going to forget that.
No.
And I said, why not, if you could nominate John Kerry, why not Jane Fonda? And when Hannity started to challenge him on it, Graham said, no, he's traveled around the world, and that makes him qualified. Heck, that makes me qualified.
Yeah, that is not a confidence builder either. Yeah, Lindsey Graham, you know, as needs to be held accountable for certain things, certainly so. And, I don't think traveling around the world qualifies you to be Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, certainly.
Do you think, based on your research with the think tanking and just research, that there's a huge percentage right now of American voters who have they're basically the indoctrinated version, or is that more of a conspiracy type? It goes throughout history. There's always the apathy of the people.
Right.
Does it just seem like it's getting bigger? Or is it help me here?
Well, the apathy of the people. It's not a. You don't get a good feeling when you go out and talk to people on the street. Let's say, you know, who are, you know, you see these interviews like with Letterman or whatever, you know, people on the street, and you're asking them questions, and they don't have a clue what's going on. I don't know if the population is any more disinterested than it has been in the past. I think that when we go out and speak to groups, we speak to a lot of different service groups and what have you. These folks are politically active folks, and so they're relatively well informed and know and keep up with public policy issues. And so it's a pleasure to talk to them. But you know, if you go to college campuses, sometimes you know you run into things that just makes your head shake. That folks aren't informed, and yet they're going to the polls and voting, And so there's a question: is you know, you have all this rhetoric about you need to get out and vote, but is there something called a responsible voter? You know, do you have a responsibility to be informed about things before you vote as well? And I would hope when people vote that they have some type of idea of what's going on, but I don't think that's always the case. Obviously, it's not always the case.
Yeah, and considering Florida had, a 21-page ballot?
I know.
That's scary.
Yeah, that is scary. That is scary. You can't.
They had locally where I'm at, in one of the precincts, it took people 2 hours to vote.
You're kidding.
Let me finish here. No, I'm not kidding. It was in the newspaper, and once the TV cameras got to the precinct, it clearly expressed why. Now, I expressed my opinion, which drove one of the campaign managers for candidate. It really bothered him. But it is amazing how you had mentioned earlier about on the ground. I'd be willing to bet this precinct, primarily minority, that most of these people didn't even know how to read. But you know what? They had people there helping them. And, I mean, just their attack on – there is not one vote of any kind. The Democrats don't seem to want – I mean, they seem so much more aggressive and organized and intelligent at every vote. They make people feel like even though their vote doesn't count and the party is just as big and corrupt as anything, they make it seem like, wow, I'm part of this team.
Sure.
The GOP just doesn't seem to do that. But as they showed the big picture, my friend looked at me and says, I wonder how many of these people even know how to read. And not that many. I said, but look at how many there are.
Right.
I mean, the line was just like, it was almost as if when some of these countries that turn to a republic get to vote for the first time, they get in line for days.
Right.
And this, you can bet that virtually 100% of these votes were for Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just seems like they get the word out better, or I don't know, they just make you feel wanted more.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think the Republicans, in a large sense, I think in a large way, as a conservative myself, I almost feel expunged from the GOP because it's almost run by fat cats, and it's just almost like, I don't know, you don't feel wanted.
Right. Well, I think the Democrat Party is run by fat cats too. But you're exactly right that they've been able to personalize it better. Make people feel better about voting. The Republicans have a lot of things to learn from the Democrats when it goes to turn out the vote, certainly so.
Yeah, unfortunately, we like to play by the rules. They don't. That's the big difference.
I'd like to see one, which isn't shown. I'd like to see one one member of the, say, a higher up of the Democratic Party. I'd like to see one of them that's homeless. Or, as you mentioned, it's a battle of the billionaires.
Mm-hmm. Right, but yes, but on the one hand too, we have I don't think money should be restricted at all going into campaigns, and I think the more it would be great if it's more transparent. I think that's very good, so people can trace the money and figure out whom they're voting for, or who's supporting whom, and so on. But now as the super PACs have started to develop, and I'm not exactly sure how much impact they had on this election, but there was some certainly. But what you're going to see now is a proliferation of more super PACs coming about, and as individuals, we then have an opportunity to go ahead and support. So there'll be a super PAC for every interest going on. We can then contribute to those particular organizations and have our voices heard, through them as well. So I don't think, there's no problem, I don't think, with more money coming in, big money coming in to that. That's freedom of speech, and the more the merrier. I think what's important, though, is that you are an informed voter, and so you can figure out what's going on.
Yeah, we got someone that sent me a private message from the chat room saying that he requested an absentee ballot, but it never arrived. And when he went to check his voter registration, someone else, who happens to be a female, appeared under his information.
What?
And okay. Yeah.
Didn't
and when they did a
that?
Background, well, that's what I'm telling him, to contact his attorney general, state attorney general, because that sounds like a criminal matter.
Yes.
And
sure.
He did a background check, and she's not real. So that's interesting. If anyone found something like that, contact your law enforcement, your attorney general. Wow.
Definitely. That's really
Yeah. Oh, listen, Corey, this has been a fantastic. The time has just flown right on by. We only got about 5 minutes left on the clock here. I want to thank you for being our guest. You're a wonderful guest.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to come on the show, and hope we can do it again.
Absolutely.
How about your website? Tell us how people...
Oh, yeah, our website is johnlock.org. That takes you into the main website. We have 13 different websites in our organization that take you to all sorts of information and research. And then the Carolina Journal is at carolinajournal.com. And you can go there and get the daily updates. You can sign up for daily updates as well and get the free subscription. So, yeah, please do visit our websites. We would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Corey Swanson, with the John Locke Foundation, and you'll find it at johnlock.org. Thank you so much, Corey.
Thank you, Anna.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay, thank you. Yes, sir.
Oh, that was fantastic. That was a great, great interview, wasn't it?
Absolutely. Always like to have smart people on our show.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, we got some good shows coming up also. We got coming up Stacy Swimp, who was supposed to appear on the last show because he had to catch a plane, had to reschedule. So he will be here on Tuesday. So right after that, on the following Friday, we're going to have Major General Livingston, James E. Livingston, and Professor Colin Heaton. Major General Livingston is a living, breathing Medal of Honor winner. He was awarded Medal of Honor for Vietnam in 1968. So we'll have that. They have a book called Noble Warrior that they wrote together. So they'll be on. And then the following week, we're going to have Robin Walensky. She's a news anchor for Glenn Beck TV. So we got some great shows coming up.
I'm excited about that. I mean, I really enjoy behind-the-scenes people. You hear Rush all the time talk about Snerdly, and well, I like behind-the-scenes people. So it'll be very interesting talking about the Glenn Beck show and the things you don't see visibly.
Yeah, and she is a news anchor there too. So, you know, we got a lot of things that we can cover, different subjects we can cover. You know, one thing I did also forget to mention, today is Friday. Today is Papa John's Day. And Papa John made a statement that when Obamacare comes in, he's going to be forced to cut his employee hours. So the liberals had a major outcry and says, oh, no, you can't do that. He says, I can't deliver my product for the price I'm delivering it to the people and have to deal with Obamacare. So I'm going to be forced to cut everyone to part-time. So they decided they're going to try to boycott. But instead, everyone, order a Papa John's pizza today.
Meatball and pepperoni is their new one. It's $11. Really good. I already had it.
All right. So until then, we'll be back on Tuesday, same bat time, same bat station. So you see you then. Have a healthy, happy, and safe weekend. God bless you all.
Good afternoon, everyone.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.